Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me on the program today is my co-host and chairman of our advisory board, Ron Bachman. Ron, good morning to you.
Good morning from the IHC outlet in Destin, Florida.
How's your day starting out? We've got a beautiful sunny day out there.
Yeah, you know, it's always sunny in Florida. Whether the skies are clear or not, it's always a sunny attitude everybody has. So what can I say? It's a wonderful day.
Yep. Well, I hope everyone is taking time out of their summertime to join us today, and we really appreciate you spending the time. We've got a great program today. We got Seth Seckner, who is the Chief Health Officer with Optum, and going to talk about that ever-popular topic, trends in workplace wellness, because you know, Optum is certainly one of the leaders in this space. It'll be interesting to have Seth on and get his perspective and his thought leadership. I need to pause and really thank our show sponsor, Aflac, you know, the leader in voluntary supplemental benefits. And, you know, Aflac's new message for all of you out there is how voluntary is really becoming an essential benefit. With the movement to more HSA high deductible plans, more plans of choice, with the evolution of benefit marketplaces and how voluntary supplement is building out to them, I think it's well stated that as individuals get more exposed to risk on the medical side and look at other lifestyle benefits, voluntary certainly are becoming, you know, the new essential benefit. So I want to thank Aflac for being our show sponsor and sponsoring some initiatives across our platforms, including our events. And again, everyone knows you can go to www.aflac.com. Ron, you know, we're and Jonathan, our radio producer's here. Jonathan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're right on top of PEF Baltimore coming up in about 2.5 months, and on September 8th through 9th. You know, pretty exciting time, and this whole marketplace is kind of redefining itself and retooling itself. And I think it's got a real, you know, benefit marketplaces have a real role to play. And it, so we're excited about, you know, having the community come together with us on September 8th through 9th. And I wanted to take a minute and really, Ryan Howell is the executive director of Private Exchange Coalition. And we are working on kind of a positioning for our events and our exchange initiatives. And it's going to actually be part of our opening keynote at Private Exchange Forum. And I think it really communicates to market that maybe doesn't understand exchanges or where technology-enabled, you know, benefit distribution platforms are going to evolve. And as all of us know, we're really still at the beginning of this market. And it's really redefining itself. Employers are trying to figure out if it can or cannot work. There's a lot of misassumptions out there. Frankly, there was a lot of marketing hype around exchanges the last couple of years. Brokers are trying to figure out how this becomes a good tool for them in their practice to run. Health plans are embracing exchanges and figure out how they compete not only on their own with their own exchange, but how they compete in exchanges. But I like how Ryan kind of was breaking down kind of an employer roadmap and the other stakeholders really understanding exchanges. And we kind of came up with Private Exchange 1.0, Private Exchange 2.0, and Private Exchange 3.0. I think this really clarifies where we're going. Right now, a lot of us are in Private Exchange 1.0, and that's transaction-focused. And that even is focused on where innovation and technology can help administer, enroll, and deliver your benefits, and begins to move into kind of multi-plan selections, begins to embrace decision support tools, begins to look at provider selections, and has some of the basic choice, primarily, you know, around initially voluntary and supplements. So it really focuses on how employers and those working with them really help enroll better their employee population and their families, and really deliver their benefits a lot more efficiently. Then you look at 2.0, and a lot of companies are 2.0, and some companies go 1.0, 2.0 together. And 2.0 really starts to get into benefit and plan design. You know, that's where your companies may execute a defined contribution strategy, where you have a multiple-choice, you know, HRAs, where you see a more robust voluntary, you know, supplemental, where you start to involve transparency and make transparency, where wellness starts to come into the equation as part of an integrated, you know, delivery model and integrated care model. And then 3.0 gets pretty exciting when you think about, when we think about, and Ron, I know you spent a lot of time on this, you know, in our total space, but when you think about care management and care delivery, when you think about the evolution of, you know, direct contracting networks, of employers setting up their own networks, you know, where, what is the role of these benefit platforms on delivering care and helping manage care? And so from direct contracting to price transparency to consumerism, et cetera. So, you know, I think this clarifies, if I'm an employer out there, it says, well, so if I take the first step and improve how we administrate our benefits and maybe do some basic initial choices, you know, I don't have to be all in, but what's my end goal? Because if I'm building a five-year benefit plan, where am I going, Ron, right? I mean, you know, what's my direction? Yep. Where am I heading with this? So that's kind of our messaging, Ron. Any comments from you?
Yeah, no, I think you've laid it out very well. I think that at the end of the day, employers are going to be asking the question as they look at the possibility of exchanges, what does it do for me? What does it do for my department in administering the benefits that I have to? What does it do for my employees? What does it do for the family members? Does it help in any way? Is it any different than if I did it without an exchange? And I think the technology is probably misunderstood as to the growth and advancement of the technology, the platforms underneath it. I think, and you start to lay out the, you know, sort of the generational, you know, 1.0, 2.0, 3.0 options. I think the thread throughout those, as I see it, is that employers are already moving towards healthcare consumers and choice, options, convenience, different delivery systems, different product offerings. And I think that's throughout there. But I think as you move along in that spectrum of the evolution for exchanges, at least I see the connection more clearly between healthcare consumerism that we've been talking about and the exchange and the technology to deliver that. The technology is developing, but I'm not sure that the employers understand that that technology and the exchange opportunity is another way to maybe more efficiently in their organization deliver those benefits. And so I think it all kind of comes together. And if somebody wants to find out and learn about exchanges and what they can really do to advance maybe a strategy that's already in place about moving towards healthcare consumerism, I think just the mention of the companies that you already introduced in this program today, major companies like Aflac and Optum, which is a subsidiary of United Healthcare, just two examples of the big major names in this industry that have the capital, the know-how, the marketing to be able to develop the issues that we're talking about with exchanges. So if an employer wants to answer those basic questions that they're going to have about the pros and the cons and the winners and losers and the effectiveness and alternatives to exchanges or exchanges as an alternative to what they're doing today, this is the conference to go to. I know that you're not promoting exchanges because your whole idea of IHC is to bring together all the information, both the good, the bad, and the ugly that might affect an employer, because there's no one answer for everybody. But the people who would find that benefit, I think, are going to find the answers in this Baltimore conference that you put together.
Yeah, and to really help the market come together, all stakeholders, has kind of been our franchise with IHC. It's our franchise with Private Exchange Forum. Come together to listen to each other, to listen to the experts there, and to figure out what it is or what it isn't. Because, you know, as we kind of close this first segment, is that, you know, with all the marketing hype that was around exchanges, I think there was a lot of misassumptions. And I know some employers have already pulled back based upon those misassumptions, not based upon what it can or can be. For example,
right.
You know, Aon does a great job, but they told you if you weren't on fully insured, you couldn't be an exchange. Well, that's false. I mean, that's just not right. It doesn't mean Aon's model isn't good for some, but, you know, a emerging marketplace is really about, if you think about it, it's not only about moving to more choice for your employees and their families, but it's about an employer choosing how to execute whatever benefit plan strategy, benefit plan design strategy they want to choose. And when you look at this roadmap, it's about saying, hey, I'm starting here, and almost run like we did with HSA high deductible consumerism. Everyone didn't jump all in and add telehealth and add transparency and add all these things. You know, most of them moved in and they put an HSA and high deductible plan in place. The PPO and HMO was still in place, right? I mean, they're walking
right.
before they run. It's the same thing with an
right.
exchange environment. You take the first step
yep.
and improve benefit admin, prove innovation around the front end, maybe put, you know, add some basic choice, and then you're evolving eventually to a more robust benefit delivery platform, a more robust platform that even provides care delivery and care management. So, again, you just said, you know, if you really want to be in the game and understand what this can be or cannot be for your 1, 2, 3, 5 year plan, if you're an employer, if you're a broker, how this can help your employer clients, how this can help your practice, TPA the same, health plans the same. That's why you need to join us in Baltimore on September 8th through 9th. This is going to be the discussion. This is going to be the theme. You can sign up by going to privateexchangeforum.com. The early bird rates are in. So we hope to see you in Baltimore. And let's kind of flip the page and let's talk about wellness, a very popular topic and very changing topic. And there's probably no one better to talk about it than one of the thought leaders in this space, Seth Sexner, the Chief Health Officer with Optum. Seth, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to talk to you again. I'm glad you were able to join us and spend some time today. You know, most of the market knows Optum, but kind of do a minute backgrounder on Optum. Give our listeners out there a picture of Optum and who you guys are as one of the de facto leaders in this space.
Sure, happy to do that. So Optum is part of United Health Group. United Health Group is really United Healthcare, the insurance, and Optum, the service company. And we're a leading health service company. We partner with 4 out of 5 hospitals, half the Fortune 500 companies, nearly 300 health plans. And really, United Health Group now is a Fortune 6 company. If Optum was on its own, it would be somewhere around a Fortune 45, Fortune 50 company.
Big footprint in the space. You know, Seth, you and the Optum team, you know, have your kind of finger on the pulse of what's happening in wellness. And one of the ways you do this is through a lot of the surveys you do. And you just came out with your 7th annual wellness and workplace study. I mean, kind of take us through some of the highlights of that, if you would, please.
Yeah, happy to do that. And as you say, you know, Optum, we're constantly reviewing the healthcare landscape, looking at the literature that's published in journals and going to conferences, being involved in government policies, market trends, as well as conducting our own research. So as you just said, our Optum Resource Center for Health and Well-Being really does a number of different things. We're a platform for a number of different areas in thought leadership, but we do this survey. As you said, it's a 7th annual survey. It's a benchmarking survey with over, this year we had 554 benefit professionals, an employer survey with topics that covered wellness budgets, incentive strategies, on-site environment, all kinds of things that I will get into. And it really does support the kind of really understanding what are well-designed workplace wellness programs and how people establish a culture of health to help employees with their adopting healthy lifestyles.
It's a fast-changing space and kind of interesting, Seth. I know you've been around a long time in this space and myself too. I'm not trying to date you there, but
no worries.
You know, I mean wellness is you know, I've been around for 25 years, and 5 years ago or so, it took kind of bad rap, and but, you know, it's here and here to stay. It's going to continue to change. So what are some major changes you've seen really over the last 7 years since you did this survey? first started doing
Yeah, you know, in terms of some of the changes, I think, you know, to your point, there's still significant investment in wellness programs and a little bit of a shift towards well-being. I mean, we're seeing, you know, 25 to 30% of companies saying that they're increasing their wellness budgets and then really a very small portion decreasing. What we're seeing, though, is that they're investing in different areas. So while they're still investing in the physical area, they're starting to look at mental health, and then there's a lot of discussion about investing in financial well-being and social well-being. Some of the big changes, I think, from 5 years ago is a big increase in biometric screenings. For example, we have 60% of the large employers are doing biometric screenings. That was closer to 44% 5 years ago. Another big trend we're seeing is dedicated on-site staff or a dedicated wellness staff member. I think organizations are seeing that this is a little different than just implementing a copay change, that it really does require some dedicated staff. So we're seeing that. And, of course, you know, incentives now, we're seeing 90% of large employers offering incentives compared to more like 80% in 2010. So quite a few significant shifts in how people are going about the programs these days.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't want Ron to jump in or ask, but it's interesting. You know, I think you make some great points there about kind of the reinvesting or where the investment's going. I mean, in this space, you always get kind of the negatives to come out at times. I mean, you read a lot recently about, oh, hey, maybe it's cooling off around wellness. Employers are pulling back here and there. And where I agree with you, I think that, hey, maybe they're not going to do on-site flu shots. Maybe they're not going to do this physical stuff. But I think, to your point, they're reallocating and investing where they want to change and do some of these wellness initiatives. And that's kind of what you're saying as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think what's happening is there's some discussion about what's the value proposition, and that while there has always been an appropriate focus on, hey, is this saving me money? Does this impact my healthcare costs? And how do I understand the return on investment? I think employers are really shifting that conversation to the value on investment, really looking at, okay, look, it's pretty hard to show in-year healthcare cost change. We've been able to demonstrate it in any number of different studies. But at the end of the day, really the bigger benefit is, does a healthy, engaged, active workforce help me to achieve my business performance metrics? Do I sell more? Do I have a better quality product? Do I have better customer service? Am I recruiting and retaining people better with these programs? So expanding the entire value proposition. And we are seeing, again, even in our survey, that, you know, only 16% say they effectively track ROI, but many are talking about having this shift to more of a VOI and understanding what else a healthy culture does for their organizations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Ron?
Yeah, Seth, this is fantastic stuff, and I think the audience really appreciates the kind of support detail that surveys give, not just opinions, but actually what's happening in the marketplace so they can see what the trends are. I've been running for IHC a pre-conference session that goes through multiple generations, and I've been saying we're in the second generation moving into the third, where the third is exactly what you just said, more about how does the health of my employees affect my work, and also, of course, how does work affect the health of my employees. The key areas there that we talk about are mental health issues. You talked about that is one of the areas that people are looking at more. Can you speak a little bit about anything that your survey is showing about an employer's interest in the mental well-being, if you will, of their employees, the stress factors that they're having to deal with, the anxieties of the current world that's moving so fast? What is your surveys, if you can share anything at this point, is talking about in those areas?
Yeah, so thank you for that. And we're seeing this shift from what I'll call wellness to well-being. We're also seeing a tremendous shift towards a culture of health, and we can talk a little bit about what that means. with the specific, with respect to your specific question, we asked, again, where people are investing their dollars. And 95% are saying we invest in physical health. About two-thirds say that they're investing in mental health. Third or so, financial health. So to your point, it's there's some investment in it, and I really see a broad, a continued shift. We're seeing a lot more of our clients asking about EAP and enhanced EAP services, and maybe even merging wellness and EAP, which in a sense have kind of been artificially separated for a long time. So
right.
I really do see that the recognition of where a person's, the social determinants of health are starting to be recognized as important factors in why someone may or may not be taking care of their physical health.
Great. This area of that you're talking about really has fascinated me for a long time. I consider there are four aspects of human life: mental, physical, social, and spiritual. And we focused on the physical for so long. I'm glad to see more of the mental is coming in. Is there anything in your survey that talks about the social or the spiritual, not religious per se, I guess that's not politically correct, but spiritual? Because I'm seeing more companies begin to look at things like yoga and meditation. There's even some more quasi-religious services out there, something called marketplace pastors, for example, that take pastoral services beyond just hospice care, but allow people to access some help and support on their spiritual well-being as well. Is there anything in your survey that sort of touched on that, or if not, any of your own thoughts about the social and the spiritual parts of wellness?
Yeah, I think that there are certainly, what I believe is happening is that organizations are trying to be more relevant to their employees and their families. And to that point, they're looking for more diverse topics. So while we didn't ask specifically about things like yoga or some of the spiritual health, we do have some questions about, for example, discounts on gym memberships. 61% off some kind of discount on a gym membership. A lot are doing things around a health or fitness challenge. It's 58% are doing things around health and fitness challenges, and they consider them to be social health because that is where you can, you know, create your own teams and challenge and have some healthy competition. So that's kind of a corporate way, you know, because to your point, we're not supposed to talk about spirituality or things like that. Doesn't work real well sometimes in the CFO office, but at the end of the day, what we're really looking at is a population health approach and things like what we see is resiliency training. You know, it's kind of the new stress is mindfulness and resiliency, and we are certainly seeing significant input on that. We're seeing 29% have on-site stress reduction activities of some sort or another. So I think in their own way, corporate America is trying to address those very important issues that you just pointed out.
Yes, that's,
well,
that's,
I think
that's,
the
Go ahead, Ron.
I was going to say the I've always said that if a company doesn't have a stress management program, I can assure you 100% that their employees have their own stress management program. It may not be what you want. It's, you know, comfort food and it's smoking and it's drinking. And so it's good to have those kinds of specific programs of help for employees, or you're going to lose them. They're not going to be productive employees. And that's what you were saying earlier. This is about productivity and limiting unscheduled sicknesses and all those sorts of things. So I congratulate you on your survey and the efforts that you have in this whole area. So, Doug, let me turn back to you. Sound like you had another question, Doug.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's kind of a question and a comment, too. What you're talking about, Seth, is really taking a holistic view at your employee population. And it's not moving away from the physical, but a holistic view. And a kind of interesting dynamic is yesterday I was on the phone with somebody that has, you know, is coming at it from the caregiver side of the space and really developed a service for employers to provide to those employees that are taking care, you know, family members. And when you break that down, I mean, there's tremendous stress around that. So you're going to lose productivity unless you help them deal with that. I mean, you know, we've already talked about financial wellness. We've already talked about depression and other things. So it's all these different factors emerging, correct? I mean, it's all these different things to take a look at.
Absolutely. One of the biggest areas that it's interesting to me that it overlaps in, quote, wellness or population health, but navigating the healthcare system. We all know how challenging that is.
Yeah.
And many, to your point, we have a generation now that's dealing with their own kids as well as their parents. The caregiving issue is becoming bigger and bigger. So helping people navigate the system, whether it's, you know, I heard earlier you're talking about exchange systems or just a more complicated healthcare system, consumer-directed plans, what does it mean? How do I manage my budget? How do I plan for these kinds of financial issues? A healthier person is going to cost them less in retirement, so how do we bring that up? So we can't separate the whole healthcare system, the provider system, the quality of care on that side with what we're trying to have individuals and corporations doing as well.
And Seth, I mean, you know, while these programs must, you know, help employers manage the risk and, you know, improve productivity, they're also evolving into being a very important part as we've really faced some skilled workforce shortages out there with retaining good people, right? I mean, that's a critical component of good, well-rounded, well-being program. Is that not correct?
Yeah, we see a huge piece of that now, especially while we have a very, you know, demanding, competitive labor pool going on right now. And I live in the California, the Bay Area, and the Silicon Valley, and the tech companies are competing for labor right and left. And so their value proposition for these programs is recruit and retain and help a lot of these people who, you know, work really hard, long hours, keep them healthy and fit. I'll tell you something. You asked me what one of the most interesting changes are. When we asked employers and then the consumers, what's the number one program you want in a wellness program, years ago it used to be weight management. Today the number one program is sleep. People want more sleep, more energy, and we're seeing a lot of programming around that very issue.
Well, Seth, listen, this is a big topic and not enough time in a day, and we're coming up to the end of this program. Really, really appreciate it. And I'm going to get you up on one of our podiums and one of our events soon. You and I have talked about that many times. I'd love to have you come out and be one of our lead speakers, maybe in Las Vegas. That might fit your schedule and it's close to you, but would love to have you there. I love your thought leadership and your talking points. I want to give you a chance to kind of leave our audience with some key talking points or key takeaways, please.
Sure. So a couple of things. One would be when we think about engagement is one of the biggest issues that organizations have. They have all these great programs, and people don't often take advantage of them. So think about an engagement strategy that involves strong communications that are relevant to the audience. Think about a culture of health that has leadership engagement, peer support, physical environment, and supportive policies. And think about an incentive design that really bridges financial and non-financial incentives and individual as well as group targets, and then all of those things driven by programs and services that are easy and accessible for the consumer. So as you think about the whole investment process, how you understand the population, we need to engage the population in the right mix of programs, and then, of course, have some metrics that really measure the entire value proposition. So I really appreciate the opportunity to spend time with everyone today, and it would be my pleasure to join you at a conference in some future date.
Yeah, thank you, Seth, so much. Appreciate you taking time out of your day. Good topic, good discussion, a lot of good stuff. You have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. Take care, everyone.
Take care, Seth. Big and wide topic, Ron, changing every day.
It really is, but you know what's exciting is that the survey and the results that he was talking about really reinforce what IHC has been putting out there as part of the model that we see developing in healthcare consumers. And the five-generational model, we've been saying, again, that you know companies are beginning to move into what we call the third generation without getting into all the details of what each one of them are. We're seeing that movement, which is really around how does your employees' health affect your business, your bottom line? Don't just worry about what your healthcare budget line item is and control those costs, but control the overall health of employees that affect your business. And all the different things that he was talking about in terms of wellness and the choices around whether it's sleep, as he was mentioning at the end, or whether it's around mental health or the social, are exactly the things that we've been talking about for a good while. And I think he's showing that the world is actually moving there, and companies like Optum are taking actions and providing services around those same topics, so that the market's moving in the direction that we've sort of anticipated. And, you know, we've got a fourth and a fifth generation. And again, we're seeing activities from many vendors and many services out in those areas. So, you know, I would suggest organizations like Optum. I'd invite them to my pre-con because I think they would find a great compatibility in what's going on. I would invite any company out there that's working in this area as a solution provider to come to the conference to learn about what IHC sees as the future, and that we're also seeing the vendors come in and provide the services as we grow and evolve in the direction. So I think we've got a model at IHC that outlines where the future and the potential can be, not promoting it, but just saying, here's what the real world seems like it's doing, and we just have a little bit of a glimpse and insight into those futures. But now we're seeing it actually occur in the marketplace with more and more services. So it's pretty exciting to hear his presentation. I would love to hear more from him, and I think our audience at the conference, you mentioned the Las Vegas conference that'll be coming up in the fall. He'd be a great presenter along with many others that we have on this program as well.
Yeah, particularly, you know, as we kind of close this program, I mean, when you look at IHC Forum West, we're going to focus on innovation and certainly wellness innovation, benefit technology innovation, you know, changing product innovation and other areas are all going to be focused on at IHC Forum West. And so if you're listening and you got a topic you want to speak on or you want to participate with us, if you're an attendee that wants to join us there, you know, now's the time to access us at theiaccforum.com. So the other part of innovation and showcasing innovation as we close this program is that, you know, our nominations for Superstar and Innovators is open. This will be, what, Jonathan, our 10th year, right?
Nope, that was last year.
That's the 11th year, okay. Yep. 11th year, very well received, high visibility, an awards banquet at IHC Forum West. If you know an innovator that you'd like to nominate, go to our IHCC.com website. If you know somebody inside an organization doing good work, whether it's a benefit leader, whether it's a CEO leading his company, whether you're a leading broker firm, consulting firm, TPA, or health plan, check out these awards because it's a great opportunity to recognize key individuals and key companies getting good work done. And again, www.theiaccc.com. I want to thank everyone for joining us on the program today. I hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.